I'll be reading from Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 4 through 7. A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north. Around and around goes the wind, and on its circuits the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full, to the place where the streams flow, where they flow again. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied without seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing.
I thought maybe I got that wrong. That was... Good morning. It is good to see all of you this morning. Thank you for being here. Many of you know that I was gone last week. And it is good to be with you again. Good to be back home. Look forward to our time together today. In just a few moments, one of the first texts we'll read will be in Ezra. So you can go ahead and be finding the book of Ezra. Ezra chapter 3, as a matter of fact. Ezra chapter 3. For those of you that are guests here, thank you for being here this morning. We appreciate that. You've encouraged us, and we hope that you will be encouraged today. And if you have any questions, ask us about those things. We look forward to having that discussion with you. But more importantly, just know that your presence has uplifted us, and we're so glad you're here. If you're from the community looking for a place to call home, a church family, we'd suggest you found that today. Encourage you to talk to one of our shepherds about being numbered among this flock. And we would love to have you and be working with you as we serve God until the world comes to an end, or we come to an end, and look forward to our home in heaven together. Well, the reality is, there is no question about it. There is a generation gap. There is always a generation gap. That gap is felt in my house sometimes, not by me as much as by my wife, when my kids use words like lit and fam. And she'll go, what is that? Now, I'm cool enough, I know that stuff, just so y'all know. So me and Peyton and Jillian have to have a teaching moment with Miss Duane, because she's around second graders and they're not that hip. So they don't use the lingo like we cool people do. And I know that cool is not even a good word anymore. I'm doing that for the older generation so they get it. But if you don't think that expresses it enough, how about this? Go up to a teenager and ask them if they've ever had a Sony Walkman. See, some of you like me, you remember like it was a big deal when you got a Sony Walkman. And a Sony Walkman played these things called cassette tapes. Some of you have no idea what that is. You had to actually turn it over to hear the rest of the tape. Or maybe, and I even remember this, it was just at the beginning of my life, the 8-track phased out. And my parents had the stereo on top of the china cabinet that played records and an 8-track. And my mom wore out the greatest hits of Johnny Cash on that 8-track player. Or how about this? You know what the greatest security system is today to keep your card from getting stolen? A clutch. Because nobody under 30 knows how to drive a stick. In fact, I picked up Jordan Hurd in the truck for VBS, and she pointed at that big thing sticking up and goes, what is that? I said, that's the transmission. What? Never mind. You see, things like that reveal that there's a big gap. Things that we take for granted, us older people, and I'm going to put myself there today. We take for granted things that the younger generation doesn't know. And we behave differently. Here's one of the interesting things studies have revealed. Generation Xers and millennials don't use voicemail. In fact, if you leave them a voicemail, they will not listen to it. You know why? Because if it was important, you would text it to me. Us old folks, we're the opposite. If it's important, we're going to leave a voicemail. And that just shows you how we think differently. Now here's the challenge. That we're supposed to come together in a way that we're unified, despite all of those differences. And somehow, when it comes especially to the church, we've got to figure out a way to bridge the gap. How do we bring these two generations that are very opposite and very different and look at things even spiritually extremely different? How do we bring them together to have the same focus and peace of mind and work and unity? I want to talk about that a little bit this morning. I will tell you as we begin, I don't have all of the answers. But I hope we can see some things that will help us this morning as we strive to do that. I also want to say this. I think we do a really good job trying to do this. Those that aren't aware, there's a mentoring program between our high school, junior high students and our older folks, and they're paired off. And the whole purpose of that program, really and truthfully, is to help take care of this to a degree. To create an admiration between both of those individuals for each other that has an appreciation out of that, coming out of that, that helps us bridge that gap so that we don't have some of the issues we have. And that's a blessing. But let's consider some more things this morning. I want to begin, though, by showing you that this is nothing new. Generational problems have existed for quite some time. In fact, a pretty long time. Like I said earlier, they're just natural. And so we see that in the Scriptures. In Judges chapter 2, and don't turn over there, I'm just going to kind of paraphrase it. In Judges chapter 2, it's recorded for us that there is this generation that comes up in verse 10, a generation after them that did not know the Lord. There comes later a generation that doesn't know the same things. And part of the reason why that generation wasn't taught enough is because the older generation just assumed they knew everything they knew, which isn't true. And that still happens today. That we have generational issues. In fact, one historian, Ed Harold, who looks at restoration history, has said every third generation, just like Judges 2:10 is really referring to, every third generation there's a problem. There's a lack of knowledge and understanding, and every third generation is really where you have your divisions or your problems. Which is interesting to say. It's nothing new. This has happened for a long time. But there may not be any better biblical example of this gap than in Ezra. In Ezra, the people have come back to rebuild the temple. And in chapter 3, they've rebuilt the altar and they've laid the foundation of the temple. And I want you to read with me starting in verse 10. When the builders laid the foundation of the temple of the Lord, the priests in their vestments came forward with trumpets, and the Levites and the sons of Asaph with cymbals to praise the Lord according to the directions of David, king of Israel. And they sang responsively, praising and giving thanks to the Lord. For he is good, for his steadfast love endures forever towards Israel. And all the people shouted with a great shout when they praised the Lord, because the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid. Verse 12. But many of the priests and Levites and heads of the fathers' houses, old men who'd seen the first house, wept with a loud voice when they saw the foundation of the house being laid, though many had shouted for joy, so that the people could not distinguish the sound of the joyful shout from the sound of the people's weeping, for the people shouted with a great shout, and the sound was heard far away. Here are two generations, and they are present for a tremendously important event in history. People have returned from the captivity. They are going to rebuild the temple. They're going to restore temple worship in Jerusalem. This, by the way, is a tremendously important thing. And you have this younger generation that stands back and admires what they have accomplished as a people and understands God's hand has been with them. And praise God and shout in joy and rejoice. And at the same time, there stands off to the side another group that has memories of what the temple used to be. And they mourn. And it's so loud, you can't tell the difference between the two. I think it's interesting to see the different perspective between these two generations. Here's one group of people, but they view this in two different ways. And by the way, I think what is interesting is that neither of them are condemned here. Neither one of these groups are condemned either for rejoicing or for mourning. And I think there's an important point to be made there. Sometimes what we want to do when these kinds of problems exist is we want to condemn the other. And that's not the case here at all. And what I find interesting, if you turn a couple of pages over in your Bible to Ezra chapter 6, is that by the time this comes to completion, what we see is a unified response. The people of Israel, the priests, the Levites, the rest of the returned exiles celebrated the dedication of this house of God with joy. They offered at the dedication of the house of God 100 bulls, 200 rams, 400 lambs, and a sin offering for all of Israel. 12 male goats according to the number of the tribes of Israel. And they set the priests in their divisions and Levites in their divisions for the service of God at Jerusalem as it is written in the book of Moses. Now everyone rejoices. Because now their focus is on what is important, serving God. See, in this text, you see that it is okay for generations to view things differently. But when it comes time to serve God, that there needs to be a unified focus. It's interesting that was just read for us in Ecclesiastes 1, verses 4 through 7, that generations essentially will come and go. And if you read just later in that text, starting in verse 9, it says, what has been is what will be. And what has been done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which it said, see, this is new, it's already been in the ages before us. There's no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of later things to be among those who come after. I think it's interesting this text says, listen, generations come, generations go, but there's nothing new. In fact, I will tell you that even this generation gap you may sometimes feel, it's nothing new. You just probably happen, if you're older, to be on the other side of the gap. Because if you will remember back to when you were the younger generation, you probably viewed things similarly than is the younger generation today, and older folks looked at you the same way that older you look at the younger generation today. People looked at you and thought, you know, I just don't know about those kids. Or as one person once put it, an older man when I was at college down in Tampa, he told me, and this was a direct quote, and I wanted to say I'm standing right here. He said, if this is all y'all have to offer, we have no hope for the church. And I have to tell you, I think that we just need to be understanding that this happens. And we need to try not to be judgmental about that. And we need to see and understand that with different generations, there come different perspectives. And what do I mean by that? Well, let's just view some ways that different generations think. For instance, we'll start with the older generation. The older generation finds themselves concerned with denominational and doctrinal error. The older generation understands history. And they look back at what has happened and where the church has been and where they are today. Many of them still remember difficult times of division. They may have even attended some debates about that, which is a died out practice. They have had those articles from magazines in their house, and they've read books and they've studied all of the issues. And they see a movement of their fear among young people today that is far too ecumenical for them. That they're making alliances with other people regardless of doctrine. And they want to step back and say, no, you can't be that way. You have to make sure people know what truth is. And I will tell you that they have a valid point. If you turn to 2 John in verse 9, everyone who goes on ahead and does not abide in the teachings of Christ does not have God. Whoever abides in the teaching has both the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him into your house or give him any greeting. For whoever greets him takes part in his wicked works. And so this passage speaks to the fact that, listen, when there are huge doctrinal differences, you can't just overlook those things. You don't wink at that. You don't tolerate that. You don't embrace that. In fact, what was said here is you can't really have fellowship with that in a spiritual sense. And we need to understand that. And this is an important focus that can't be overlooked. And the older generation is also worried about worldliness. As a whole, this is just a general rule. Whether it is true or not, as a generation gets older, they tend to be more judgmental on those who are younger. Regardless of if it's true, please understand. We are naturally prone to look at the kids and go, these young kids just have no clue what they're doing. Part of that is generational pride. Part of that is a genuine concern. And the reality is we look at today, us older folks, me included, and we look at some of the immorality and the things that are going on, and it provides a tremendous amount of anxiety for us. And sometimes as we see the world wallowing in immorality, and we see some younger folks dancing the line far too close for our liking, it gives us some concern. And I'll just be honest with you. Looking back historically, our people as a whole, generically, participate in things today at times that 50 years ago were unheard of. They seek to defend things that 50 years ago were just not going to happen among God's people. And the defense so often is, well, it's the 21st century, or hey, this is just the world we live in. And we need to be careful of that. I will remind you in 1 John chapter 2 in verses 15 through 17 that John wrote there, do not love the world or the things of the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. And he goes on in verse 16, all that is in the world, the desire of the flesh, the desire of the eyes, pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world. And the world is passing away along with the desires, but whoever does the will of God abides forever. And so the older generations remind of that, and they see people who toil with worldliness, and maybe that's immorality, maybe that's materialism, maybe it's just the idea of wanting to fit in, and they see all of those dangers, and they look and they go, boy, they're headed down the wrong path. And that's a valid concern. But then you have the younger generation that comes along. And the first thing that they see is, they see, well, these evangelicals that you're saying we can't agree with, they are allies with us to a degree in a spiritual battle. Because as we fight against humanism and evolution and homosexuality and abortion and these important issues in our culture, we side with them in that. And the reality is we do. That so often we may disagree with somebody, but when it comes time to stand shoulder to shoulder against culture issues, we stand shoulder to shoulder with people we don't necessarily agree with. To form social change. And so when we look at that, you got to understand where they're coming from. And there's also a frustration among younger people that sometimes structure is more important than purpose. And let me explain what that means the best way I can. And I hope that those of us in the older generation are not offended by this. But the younger generation sees for years we have made them memorize the five steps of salvation, the five acts of worship, and the three works of the church, and other things like that. And we hammer that over and over and over. And yet the younger generation looks at that and sees not that that's not important, but they see that there has been a lack of other emphasis like prayer and love and helping those in need. And they would turn to a place like Matthew chapter 23, verses 23 through 24, written to the Pharisees. It says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, you tithe mint, dill, cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. These you ought to have done without neglecting the others, you blind guides straining at a gnat and swallowing a camel. And the younger generation would say, look, we're not saying those things aren't important, but there are more important things we've left undone. And they may have a valid point. In fact, I think they do sometimes. Sometimes we get so caught up in the functionality that we forget what we're really supposed to be doing. The younger generation is also concerned that tradition is emphasized over growth. I heard the story one time of an older lady who would not partake of Lord's Supper at a place that she visited. And the reason why was this. The table did not have the words "in remembrance of me" inscribed on the front. And since that wasn't on the front of the table, it wasn't scriptural and she wouldn't partake. I hope all of us would understand that's kind of silly. There is no passage anywhere that says, "Thou shalt inscribe in remembrance of me on the table you partake off of." And yet that is an example of how bound we can be to traditions. I have been criticized before that I don't use the King James Version. Because it says, after all, it's the authorized version if you open it up to the title page. I do want you to understand that the title page is not in any original manuscript. And by authorized, it means that it was authorized by King James, not by God. We have those kinds of traditions. And there are those among younger people that see those traditions and how they're emphasized, sometimes even over truth, and seeking to share the gospel. And it bothers them. And it should, because in Matthew 15, in verses 7 through 9, Jesus said, "You hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy of you when he said, 'These people honor me with their lips, but not their hearts. In vain they do worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men.'" When we take traditions and we bind them as being from God, we've gone too far. And finally, they're concerned that too often we're just negative and judgmental. I have to tell you, I see some Christians, I'm not going to say any of you, but when I go visit other places, I see some Christians that walk around like they are the saddest, most miserable people on the planet. And everything is wrong, and everybody is wrong, and rather than finding any time to rejoice in the Lord always, all they do is complain to the Lord always. I mean, just think about Philippians 4 written that way. Complain to the Lord always. Again, I say complain. That's not what it says. And I think sometimes we need to realize that as Christians, we have been given the greatest gift ever given, the forgiveness of sins. And regardless of what other things happen to us, we should always rejoice. We should be a content, at least, and really a joyful people. And there's a valid concern. So you look at those things, maybe you use the outline, you see them all in one piece of paper there together. You might go, "Well, who is right?" Well, I will tell you, I think to a degree both are right, and probably to some degree both are wrong. And the key to this really is simple. It's finding balance. It's not saying this generation is right and this generation's wrong or vice versa. It's realizing that both of us bring things to the table. In fact, I like to think of it this way. In a marriage, God created the perfect helpmeet for man. And I don't know how it is in your home, but my wife and I, we're different in a lot of ways. In how we view things and how we think. And there are times that I might see something and I might be on the verge of thinking it is the worst thing to happen in the history of mankind, and my wife will come in and say to me, "It's really no big deal." And by doing that, we both gain perspective. Well, I got to tell you what, if we would do a good job of coming together and seeing what each other offers, I think we would gain perspective from each other and find the balance in the middle. Let's close with a few ways that we can help bridge this gap. Number one, remember that we are a family. I want you to notice what it says. It doesn't say we are like a family. We are not like a family. We are a family. Did you get that? Turn over to 1 Timothy chapter 5 with me. 1 Timothy chapter 5. And notice what Paul tells Timothy there. 1 Timothy 5, verses 1 and 2. Do not rebuke an older man, but encourage him as you would a father. And younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters in all purity. I've always found it interesting, by the way, that what he says there is, treat older men as a father, younger men not as sons, but as brothers. Younger sisters as sisters, if you're a woman or a man. In Romans chapter 16, it's interesting that I think Paul took this literally. In verse 13, Rufus is mentioned, and it says, also his mother, who has been a mother to me as well. Here Paul views an older woman in the church as a mother. I don't know that we understand what it means to be a family, because if you're like my family growing up, or even like my kids today, it's not always the best relationship sometimes. You know, you have different family dynamics, but especially if you have a middle child with a middle child complex, some things come out sometimes. I'm not saying you have that, Jillian, at all. I was just speaking hypothetical. But there could be times where Peyton and one of his sisters, who happens to be the middle child, don't get along. They butt heads. And sometimes it seems like their relationship is more about friction than love. That's not what we're talking about when we say we're a family. It is not a license for us to argue and fuss and fight with anybody. Because I tell you what it really means to be a family. Let me just let y'all in on something. Peyton can make fun of his sister, but if you do, he will fight you. And you can make fun of, hear Jillian make fun of Peyton, but if you say that, she'll fight you. Because at the end of the day, they may have some conflict with each other, but when it comes time to be a family, they know what being a family is all about. And it's seen in other ways. There's nobody on the planet that can make dressing like my mom can. And there's nobody on the planet that could teach a Bible class like my dad could. Because when it comes time to being family, we have those things where we hold them in extremely high regard. That's what it means to be a family. To love and admire and appreciate each other. When we talk about being a family, that's what we're talking about. And what that should lead us to do is to always think the best of each other. This is a very crucial and important thing. Here's what happens between the generations typically. An older generation looks at the younger generation and they see them as being progressive and immature and liberal and even immoral sometimes. And the younger generation looks to the older generation and they see a bunch of legalistic traditionalists who lack any spiritual depth. So let me say this. Stop. Stop being judgmental. Stop being cynical. Stop being critical. Stop being mean. Stop looking at everything you see as a disagreement, as something to fight about and compete about. Stop, if you're older, looking at every young person who explains it differently than you do as being a progressive liberal who's going to destroy the church. Stop that. And if you're younger, stop looking at the older person who's just holding the traditional party line and trying to keep the church in the dark ages. Stop that. Stop looking at every comment and everything that is said as something to disagree. And remember what love really looks like. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoings, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. Love always thinks the best of other people. It gives them the benefit of the doubt. And that's what we're supposed to do. When you love somebody, you don't view them every interaction with an us versus them mentality. Not when you love them. Love always assumes that they want what is best. Love always assumes that they want to serve God. Love always assumes that they are trying to glorify God in their actions to the best of their abilities. And even if you disagree with the way they say things or maybe how they want to do things, love thinks the best of each other. And don't forget, Jesus said the world would know we are His by how we love each other. So we have to think the best. We also have to know when to change. Change may be the least liked word in the English language. We don't like change. And even at church, we don't like change. It's been about 6 months ago that we quit calling rooms adult 1, adult 2, and adult 3, and we started using room numbers. Or at least we've tried to. Because people will still love them, they'll say, we're going to meet in adult 1. Hey, there's no adult 1 anymore. It's called 102. And I use that as just a show of how we really don't like to change stuff. Have you ever sat in somebody's seat at church when you're visiting? And like everybody knows what you did? And somebody even comes up and maybe one time like they did to us, looked at us and said, You're in our seat. By the way, if you're a member here, never do that to a guest. Never. That's based on the fact that we don't like to change. And yet over time, there's been a tremendous amount of change. There was a time period where churches didn't have these screens and these fancy boxes that hung from the ceiling and connected to computers for visual aids. What they had was bed sheets that were painted and took a lot of hours to do. In fact, we have a lot of those upstairs that are stored and preserved just so you could see that if you want. And then the technology came and we had this thing called the overhead projector. Y'all guys remember that? That you had to slide the transparency in. Big box set here looked like E.T. coming out over the side. And you put those in and it's shown on the screen behind there. And if the guy was really fancy, he would print them in all black with the wet letters in white. And he'd take a highlighter and color them in. You guys remember that? And then all of a sudden technology evolved and we have these. Now I tell you what's interesting is there are still some people that walk in and see two screens and they'll turn around and walk out. But they have no problem with the bed sheet. Now scripturally, both of them are the same thing. And knowing when to change is important. Most expedients like that. Things that aren't scripturally defined, that are useful tools, they're called expedients, they have expiration dates. There will come a time where this will not be used anymore. And I have no idea what that will be. Will it be holograms? Will everybody get their own screen? I have no idea what that will be. I just know the way technology goes, there's coming a day where this won't exist. Just know when the time is to change. Let me tell you one change I'm really thankful for. There was a time where if you wanted to be baptized, you had to go outside. Some of you remember those times. My first work, you could walk across the highway down to the house of the person who owned the land the building was built on, and there was a concrete-poured baptistry in the backyard. And they would run spring water to that baptistry. Let me tell you something. If you think that's what you have to do, you're going to get to baptize the people in January, not me. I'm thankful for indoor plumbing and a baptistry that, by the way, is heated. And you might look at that and go, well, why did we do that? Because it was time to change. And sometimes you have to remember that there are changes we can make that are not only allowed, they're good. And we need to know when that is. And finally, we just need to love one another. We need to love one another. Too often, here's why we have some problems between generations is because it's more like a boxing match. In this corner, you have, with a reach of 50 years in our arsenal of Scripture, the older generation. And over in this corner you have from parts unknown because we don't know where they're coming from when they say stuff. But they have a lot of zeal, the younger generation, and the bell rings and here they come. And it turns into this competition. And the older generation lands the first blow with the words, "This is how we've always done it." The younger generation counterpunches with, "That doesn't make it right." And here comes the older generation with the uppercut that says, "You don't know where that's going to lead you." And the younger generation's going to come back, "We got to get out of the dark ages." And here comes this blow after blow after blow, fight after fight after fight. And the reason that happens is the same reason it happens in your homes. Because you become more interested in winning the argument and the competition than loving each other. In Ephesians chapter 4, Paul said, "Walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you've been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace." The next time you think about this other person, or other generation, excuse me, and you don't understand where they're coming from, let me give you some advice from Ephesians 4, verses 1 through 3 quickly. Number one, remember to walk worthy of your calling. You weren't called to fuss and fight. Walk in the way you were called. Secondly, be humble. Find humility. That's a key. And third, gentleness. Fourth, patience. Fifth, love each other. And six, maintain peace. Maintain peace. That's what God expects of us. Is to walk worthy in a way which we are called by being a kind and patient and gentle people that love each other and maintain peace. And make sure you understand something. Preachers don't preach lessons like this because they know of a specific problem. They preach lessons like this because they don't want to know of a specific problem. This isn't a rebuke or a chastisement. This is a reminder that these are the things we're supposed to do so there would be no need for a rebuke or a chastisement. And we have to admit and acknowledge that there will always be problems between generations. Because that's always existed. And generations come and go, but there's nothing new under the sun. May God help us all to be active as we bridge that gap. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for today and the time to be together and the time to study from your word. We're thankful for this good book that has been preserved so that we can strive to serve you and be pleasing to you and do the things you've asked us to do. Be with us as we go to our classes. Help us to focus on the things we're being taught and add them to our lives and be able to be pleasing to you in all of those things. Help us to bridge this gap that we understand is just going to naturally exist. And help us to reach across and embrace one another and understand each other and love one another. Because we know this is worthy of what you've asked us to do. And we know this will provide the peace that will glorify you, not only to those here today, but to the entire world around us. We ask all this in your Son's name. Amen. We'll begin classes at 5 till.